Chronicles of Madness with Cedric and Michael Mayhew.
Live and broadcasting.
First episode. Well, I guess I should introduce myself. I guess that would make sense, right? Because, yeah. You know, people be like, who the fuck are these assholes? Well, anyway, I'm Cedric.
And I'm Michael Mayhew.
With a double M, as you can tell by the meh, meh.
I like to enunciate. It's the meh, meh, meh.
But, yep, so I think we're going to let everybody know that we're going to talk about a lot of different things in each episode, and probably some of the episodes, many different things. And I can't promise that whatever we start at will be where we're going to end at for the show.
No, I mean, you could probably promise that wherever we start at will definitely not be where we end at by the end of every show.
Yeah, I kind of think that might be the simpler thing. So basically, ignore the title because you might get 5 minutes. Maybe 10.
You know, on a good day.
Yeah, so.
But I mean, eventually, hopefully, what we'll be able to do is bring a little bit more of a structure and an idea to it. But, you know, to start, just kind of want to free ball and see how it goes. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Definitely once we get our groove going with everything. But this week's episode, hopefully the start of many more, we decided, I think, I want to talk about the unexplained a little bit. So, I know with myself, being a paranormal investigator over the years, I've experienced and read about many different things, to say the least, that are just unbelievable.
No, I think it's always been the kind of thing that fascinates you. I mean, you know, we grow up in a civilization for a society that's kind of really geared towards like a black and white explanation of everything. You know, you grow up, pass, fail, yes, no, you know, win, lose. And then you find those things that kind of tickle the space in between, you know, like your Loch Ness Monster, your Bigfoot, the hint of magic that sits behind the veil of reality, if you will.
Definitely. I mean, we had talked the other week about this show today, and the pyramids themselves, I mean, look at the history that man believed. At one point, they believed they were granaries for the Egyptians versus tombs. And even now, people might have some different views on what they could have been.
No, and it's kind of fascinating. Like, you kind of almost at the point nowadays where you have to figure out exactly which pyramid you want to talk about. Obviously, you mean the ones in Egypt, on the Giza Plateau. And it's fascinating the more you learn about them to see. I mean, they really don't know how they're constructed, right? That's how every fun conversation starts. Is that nobody knows how they built these things, but the purposes they could serve is crazy. Like the size and the sheer weight of the pyramids themselves, if you were to build them on natural land, would begin to sink or topple over, like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. But with the pyramids, that's on the rock shelf that they're built on, it keeps them from sinking down. So it's odd. I'm doing a horrible job of explaining it, but if you put them somewhere else, just randomly trying to find this lot of land that you can build these three giant fucking pyramids in, they'd sink or they'd fall and they'd become misshapen after years and years or hundreds of years of erosion. But they managed to find the one place you could put those three pyramids in the middle of nowhere. Well, for me to look at in the middle of nowhere, Africa, the sand dunes. But it stays. It holds the course of time, and it's a monument and testament to a people that we barely understand.
Or at least understand compared to modern man, anyway. We, looking at things, obviously, from a modern perspective, is hard to think how somebody would have done it. It's like that age-old question, if you were in a XYZ situation, what would you do? And sure, you have an answer, but everybody's different. And civilizations especially, I mean, their belief structure from what the way we, again, understand it is all guessing. That's all history really is in some ways, is understanding and guessing what happened. Because we don't meet anybody from that time period. We don't have for sure. They say, hey, it was for the gods.
No,
hey.
See, that's what we need, is we need that small phone booth that you could get into with George Carlin and zip back through time to meet people. And what we've done is the exact opposite.
So
we got rid of phone booths.
But the problem is, I think Carl would go back with the flamethrower just for fun.
Yeah.
Actually, I shouldn't say that shouldn't be a problem.
What makes it the entertaining ride it would be. It's an excellent adventure then, or excellent journey. But no, and you're right. It's like I was watching it, a show on Netflix the other day. It was Top 10 Unsolved Mysteries or something like that. And what they were getting into was the different civilizations, the lost civilizations. And they brought up the Olmec civilization. That's the civilization that had the giant stone heads, about 7 to 9 feet tall, one giant block. They had the Simpsons episode where Homer wins a giant Olmec head and it takes up the whole living room kind of deal.
Are you talking about Easter Island?
No, those are the those are the statues. But they believe they're the precursor to the Mayan civilization in South America. I got it. And what makes it so interesting is that these giant stone heads that they've created have distinctly African features, like flatter noses, wider faces. You could say more of like the Pacific Islander features and such. But you know, when they were going through it on the show, what they were explaining was that it had more of the African distinction to them. And you think about how civilizations spread, or how we think they've spread, and it's like, were the Olmecs the precursors to the Mayan civilization, or were they the same people that built the pyramids? You know, were they related to the people that built the pyramids? It's, you know, why you see so many different sets of pyramids around the world. Because you have the ones you could find in the pyramid shapes in, what is it, Bosnia? I think it is. They have the giant Russian pyramids now. The ones in
South
Egypt.
America.
Yeah. The pyramid structures, at least. Not the triangles that we're used to with the step pyramids. Yeah.
Which is kind of amazing. I mean, scientists say that shouldn't happen. But then I look at things and go, well, how many times have you had an idea that you've never told anybody? And next thing you know, a movie's made about that.
Yeah.
Not saying 100%, but it's close enough that, you know, you're nowhere near this person, you know, or whoever that came up, this group of people, yet now you both had this idea from much different upbringings, typically. And at the end of the day, then, you know, where do we get that from? Is that as we talked about before, obviously not on the show, but in our own lives as friends here, the collective human unconsciousness? Is that type of idea something that is just out there? And for people that don't know what that is, think of it as a giant data bake. Yes. Giant data bake. That is perfect. A giant database in the sky, if you will. All knowledge is in there.
I think the easiest way what they refer to it as is a universal gestalt. Right? It's I believe it's in the zero non-point theory, something like that. It's all the information that has ever been cataloged from the beginning of time to the end of time, smack dab in one place, and that each individual can tap into certain parts of that collective knowledge, and that you're not learning anything new, you're not forgetting anything old, you're just simply tapping into what is and what was and what will be. That's it. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a mind-blowing theory, because then you got to throw out the fact that time itself exists or doesn't exist. And what they're starting to, you know, that throw out theories of is in advanced mathematics is that time itself is a projection, right? So we're used to the idea that if you're looking at the Mars rover, for example, there's going to be a delay between here and there. Like, while we're setting this podcast up, there's a delay between me and this mic. And essentially that every bit of reality that you have is, oh God, it's going to go in a giant hole when I'm trying to follow through to that point.
But that's why we record live, folks.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at the different sets of how time goes forward and backwards, and it's all just a projection of what we see. So when you take away how the mind itself processes events, we see things because light shoots from the sun and it bounces off the object behind you. It hits matter, it reflects into your eyes. Your mind takes a fraction of a second in order to take all that information and then make sense of it. And up, down, left, right. Yeah. And that's, what is it, an infinitesimally small little splice of time, but it's already happened, like that little baseball skit. Like, when is then? Now! Soon! You know, you're never actually in this moment. Yep. You know, you're in the moment that just happened, and you're trying to make sense of what already, you know, just flew by you on the speed train.
Yep, that's time in a nutshell. It's always, no matter how much you're moving forward, you're always in the past.
Yeah.
At least, I almost said cognitively thinking-wise. I'm not going to be able to speak well today, apparently, folks, but it's okay.
No, enunciation is not going to be the strong point of it. That's what being live and not taking 100 takes is going to do for you.
And, by the way, I don't plan on editing this, so, folks, you're pretty much hearing what you're getting. Unless, of course, someone would, as I'm recording this in my apartment, you know, knock on my door, then obviously you might have to take a commercial break that doesn't exist. But we always are looking for sponsors, by the way.
And if you'd like to hand us money, I mean, you can definitely make sure that we throw a little bit more into the editing process of going back to make it sound beautiful just for you.
And I'll even say for person that donated X money.
To be edited later and yes, not thrown into this podcast, but citation footnote. But no, I mean, and it's neat too, if you look at the whole time theory, right? They explain that when you get into the mathematics of gravity and astronomy and how the planets move, that if you were to put time into the theories, that it doesn't have any effect on it, positively, negatively, that we as human creatures experience time, and it may be a manifestation of ours, of nothing else.
Going back to the unexplained, time is unexplained, so we don't even know half the time. Well, hey, okay, I even use time in it again. I feel like an idiot doing that. But we don't understand our reality as well as we think we do. It's everything is a process. Everything is another layer, if you will, to what is reality.
Small onion of life.
Look at legends of, well, ghosts, for example, is probably a good one here. People see things that they cannot explain. Sure, most of it probably is explainable just outside of the normal realm of their life, but there is that small percent, less than one, that cannot be explained scientifically. And I think that is interesting to me because there's so many possibilities in that 1%. Are you talking about true past life somehow being recorded onto, you know, quartz crystals in the ground playing back? Or are you talking about an extra dimensional rift that's opening up that's a parallel dimension showing us things that are similar to our own, but not, that's maybe a little bit off on the time scale for some reason, and that's why you're seeing the 1800s and 1995, you know, or whatever is going on there. It is hard to say. Or are we talking about aliens that are just visiting us from our past, our future? There's so many possibilities there, just what people have seen, and I think that's the interesting part, is just that unknown, and looking at it and going, well, the hell was that, you know?
Well, yeah, because, you know, again, you live in a society that dictates everything, wants to make sense out of everything, wants to make order out of stuff. And in order to fit in that nice little category and that nice little tag designation, it kind of feels jarring and uncomfortable when something defies explanation. So you get two kinds of people. Excuse me. Some people love to look forward and they like to dive into the unknown, and other people are just terrified of it and dive away from it, I guess. And, you know, some people seek to find, you know, comfort in religion, and they seek to just not push themselves to understand things scientifically. Other people, you get, you know, they're afraid of what's going to happen after life, and they're terrified of religion, and they just seek to find an answer to everything mathematically, or an answer to everything, you know, scientifically, biologically. You know, through Zen, transcendence, through enlightenment, inner enlightenment, all kinds of crazy stuff.
Definitely. I mean, I know I've read a lot of stories and articles about, we talk about transcendence, with people talking about using their chakras or their energy or the third eye, whatever definition, you know, you are comfortable with as a individual. And again, what is that? And that's the thing that we've been asking a long time. And we try to be entertaining, and I hope this rambling rant that we're doing is entertaining, but at the end of the day, I think that's half the fun of what we've done, is even on investigating, like when we went out to Gettysburg the first time, in the Jenny Wade House, there have things happened there that night that were really cool, especially on, you know, EVPs, you know, and whatnot later, that we went back later, and I know I went, oh, that was just a fucking trash can at the bar across the street getting dumped.
Right.
But at the time, we didn't know that. And that's just something that, you know, it's a quest for knowledge. And the more places you see, the more history you gather, the more your personal, I don't even want to say IQ, that's not necessarily it, life experiences increases, the more you can figure out what's going on around you. And I know for me, I have a firm belief that you can kind of, I don't want to say feel what goes on, but you get a good vibe for when days are good or bad. And maybe that's just human nature, where you just remember the bad more than the good. I don't know. I'm not one of those people that documents things like that as much as, you know, we try to be scientific as much as possible, and something that is, well, unscientifically possible to document.
Unscientifically possible.
Yes. It might be a coined phrase. I don't know.
Might trademark stamp the hell out of that.
T-shirt that says, we're not sure.
No one really is, though. And that's the fun part. I mean, it's like, what's neat is you look at the human being itself as just a strict biological being, and when you see the paranormal, the unexplained, you get the spike of fear. And what is fear other than hormones and different chemicals dumped and flushed throughout the body? So you look at it again, and you can say that, you know, why do some people, that they fascinated about castles and fantasy tales, or fairy tales, not fantasy tales, fairy tales, you know, dragons and elves, and they get sucked into these different, like, lives and these adventures. Because it stimulates that little part of the mind that rewards your happy center by dumping in tons and tons of whatever beautiful chemical that is. And, you know, it's almost like you find a way to train your mind in order to release those chemicals. And, you know, whether you're reading a book or you're playing Dungeons and Dragons or you've locked into your PS4 and you're blowing up commies in, you know, World War II, and, you know, however you decide to release that, you find a way to become kind of like a hormone junkie, you know? It's, Patrick Swayze in, the movie with Keanu Reeves and
Point Break,
where he talks about being an adrenaline junkie, and you know, you jump out of the plane. Why? Because for the most part you don't feel alive, but then you're out there and everything's spiking through you, and there's no more point in your life that you feel more alive than when you're pushing that boundary and you're, you know, those chemicals are flying through you. And then you look at people that are able to do that on a smaller scale, and you know, whether it's, again, I think trying to sit down and have their little cup of tea in the corner with their newspaper with the light on in the side, and they don't want to be bothered by reality. That's their Zen mode.
Yep.
That's their way of training the mind to find that spot. And then, you know, you get that little chaotic wrecking ball, the little, you know, the little critters from the movie Critter,
mm-hmm.
that come and tear your shit up in the unexplained. And it's, to me, wonderful. And maybe that's like a little bit of a sadism or like say, you know, psychoticness. But when you take the beautiful structure drawing of reality that civilization crafts you and shake the hell out of it like a little, Etch-a-Sketch, it's relieving to me to understand that no matter how much you try to figure things out, there's always that bit of the unknown that keeps the heart beating and the, you know, that keeps the pulse quicking.
Well, it's funny you should say that thing that shakes it up. The Mothman Prophecies
mm-hmm.
is a great example of, and for anybody who hasn't, I mean, besides just the movie Richard Gere, if you haven't seen it, I think it's a great movie.
American Gigolo? Richard Gere?
Gerbil.
Him anyway, of the Gerbil?
American Gerbil.
American Gigolo anyway. Gerbil.
Part two.
American anyway. Gerbilo.
Run it.
Trademark.
Down. The Mothman Prophecies, for a story that encompasses, I mean, the book is not completely different. For those of you who haven't seen, haven't seen the book, haven't read the book. The book involves men in black more and aliens than the movie doesn't even touch on it, except for one scene in that movie. So in case you people keep telling me that there isn't aliens in Mothman Prophecies, the scene where Richard Gere is called by his wife and doesn't understand it and gets mad at the phone. And I could be wrong on the scene, by the way, but...
See, I'm going to have to go watch this now because I can't remember this.
When he slams down the phone and the bathroom door closes, in the mirror there's a reflection for a split second. And it's never addressed in the movie what that reflection is. In the book, if I am correct, which I tell everybody all the time, even when I do investigations, correct me if I'm wrong, whether I'm way off or a piece off.
That'll be the one thing we get an email about.
Yes. You son of a bitch, you missed the timestamp on that. It wasn't at 1 hour, it was 15 minutes. No, I don't know. But there is a reflection in that window, or I'm sorry, in the window, a mirror on the door. And that is actually an alien, according to the book. But the book also involves Men in Black more, alien abduction, which I think the reason they cut that out of the movie is because that movie was fairly long for what it was to begin with. And I think adding in another subtext layer might have just been too much.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many people have seen that movie. I mean, was it critically acclaimed?
Mothman Prophecies?
Yeah.
I don't know. I might call it a cult following, but I don't know if that's necessarily, you know, people know what it is. I recommend it. I mean, anybody who knows me, like, my favorite quote from that is "Wake up, number 37."
See, I feel like you could create one of those funny little tag slogans where it's like, now available in your $2.99 bin at Walmart.
It might be.
But was it a good movie? You know, it's $2.99 over in the bin at Walmart, about halfway down, left-hand side. Dive in, you'll find Narnia.
But it's one of those movies that has the layers to it and the subtext. The story itself, talking about otherworldly beings, which would be like the Mothman and Ingrid Cole, as his name was in that. Or actually, I'm not going to say his name. I don't know if that's actually accurate. I guess its name would be more correct, since who knows if that's... That concept of a higher being is male-female. I mean, that's a whole nother...
They're a non-binary, demonic, non-plutonic... I don't know. Was it apparition?
Possibly. Maybe class 5? I don't know. Fleetfoot voting? I don't know. But at the end of the day, I do love some of the quotes in that, talking about how we are like ants to them. So they see everything, but it's not quite the same, because they're just watching us do our thing. And talking about accidents and stuff, which is what Mothman's always supposedly prophesied, is these accidents when it shows up that happens shortly after as warnings. Well, they're not necessarily smarter than us. They just see a little bit further, I believe, is what the quote was, down the road. And I always thought that was interesting because, you know, just like we could see if an ant's walking towards a fire, you know, you'd hope they turn away from it.
Right.
But you don't know, you know. And I think that's the idea of, like, the Mothman prophecies is all these questions of what is, again, back to reality, what is spiritual, what is our place in not just the world, but the universe. And it's been a long time since I read the book, so I'll be honest, if I fucked up anything, you know.
Please email all hate to.
I believe you can just use my email address. It's going to be madness@asgardhammer.com. Again, that's madness@asgardhammer.com. Just label the subject hate mail, and I'll get to it. That movie in itself, I think I remember, I always love paranormal stuff. I don't care what it is. I'm always interested in it, pretty much. I mean, except for most of the horror movies nowadays, I just think are shit, but that's a whole other story. I might be just cynical now, getting older. But
you may have just always been cynical. I'm not sure the older part's working.
Maybe I'm just more honest, truthfully now to myself. But the end of the day, I love this stuff, and it's those type of movies that make you think more about what's real. You know, what is really there is what I love, because you don't know. And when you have, I've never had an experience like that's happened in that movie, where someone's telling me where something is in a closed room on a phone.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I'd have to say, I'd be pretty fucking freaked out if that was. And then freaked out as much as I'd be enjoying that that's weird.
Yeah. Well, that, like, you know, knowing concretely that you had not proof, because you're going to, how are you going to share that phone conversation with anybody? But in your own life, in your own moment, it would concretely cement that your belief, you know, the reward that you know.
It would be an epiphany, if you will.
Yeah, there you go. That sounds way better than everything I was hammering out there horribly.
I mean, I know for me, it's just like your moment of zen in life should lead to these mini epiphanies, and I think those mini epiphanies should lead to better things for most people, as long as you're willing to accept, not even responsibility, but just honesty with yourself about where things are and where you are in the universe at the moment. Because if you don't change, I mean, you have pretty much full control over your life. Not 100%, I hate to say that, but it is true. Because everything you do affects somebody else, everything they do affects you.
Yeah, but you control how it affects you.
That's true.
How you let it affect you, not how it affects you. Because at the end of the day, I mean, you know, you find people who have had the worst tragedies in the world, the craziest phenomenons, and they will just sit there and smile at you because they are happy to be chewing bubblegum or eating a candy bar or being able to just be alive, to be in this moment, to share that moment with somebody else. You know, it's kind of neat. It's kind of amazing.
I think so. I think that's why when we've had stuff happen on investigations, even we, you know, as much as I haven't seen it, but just being there for somebody else when they've had it happen, I think is pretty cool. And also, it's interesting to see how people's own biases go into making experiences happen. And that goes back with belief systems, sometimes even through religion and other things. But you just, at the end of the day, you realize some of the shit just happens, and it's just, you can't control it, you know?
See, that's where I think for me the neatest part about it all is meeting the other people. Because, I mean, events affect me as they will, and whatever. I can be, you know, weirdly detached or, you know, watch stuff and be like, woo! But meeting other people and having their experience transposed onto me, understanding what goes into shaping their experience. When you go to smaller places, like, you know, you mentioned Gettysburg earlier, and you hear these people who will claim up and down that they've seen a ghost stand up and do cartwheels in their grandmother's basement while they were chanting, I love blue candles. You know, whatever the case may be, their story that it is, you'll see them tell you about it, and you realize, you know, what it is for them to grow up in another place. You know, a whole different set of beliefs and a whole different set of cultures. Like, you know, right now, I work with a guy from Mexico, and, you know, I talk to him a lot about the different folklore and stuff that comes from where he grew up. And it's neat to me because, like, you know, you're talking about the Mothman, you know, you talk about Chupacabra, right? Mm-hmm. The goat sucker. You know, a lot of people think it's blight or people Mange. That are killing animals, and they're doing it, you know, on purpose. And then some people believe that it's actually, you know, a spirit or, you know, vengeful demon or, you know, vampire goat, whatever you want to call it, vampire demon that sucks the blood out the goat. It's totally all these different theories. But it's the same type of folklore as the Mothman prophecy, and it's not exactly, but the cultural phenomenon part, just in a completely different culture. You know, where you go to Japan and they have the suicide forest. It's a legend, it's a folklore as to what makes people go out there and commit suicide in this forest where, you know, more people do it per year than most places. It's a strange phenomenon that they go out there and they feel compelled to hang themselves. You know, this is, yet again, it's another culture on the other side of the world. And wherever you go, you'll find that folklore, that tradition, these things that try to explain life, but are more, I guess their fancy is tickled by the unexplainable, the apparitions, the things that pop up in their life, that the aberrations that don't, that defy explanation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Loch Ness is amazing too. I mean, it's a landlocked lake, but still connects to the sea by caves underneath. Yep.
And you would have known none of that if one guy didn't float out this weird theory one day that, you know, he went and made us this, what, faked the whole thing on his deathbed.
And that famous photo is the most well-known, and there's other pictures that people believe to be either seals or wood or,
But people that went from all over the world to go see
and
that.
As much as it's been explored, and I say explored, not necessarily deep sea, because the water is murky, not mm-hmm. deep sea, deep lake. But with sonar and all the technology, the only thing they know is there's some deep-ass caves.
Yeah.
And that they haven't found good old Nessie.
No, I mean, again...
But there's still these stories, and it's not just the ones of people in the water. People claim they've actually seen something walk out of the water, or waddle out, I guess might be more correct for the typical terms of Nessie. And that's what I find interesting. If you didn't have the land stories so much...
Right.
I believe this would have faded away, not by now, but more so by now.
Well, that and the frequency of it as well. I mean, when you think about how many people it was, how many different people come forward, not just, again, the guy that lived on the lake who said, hey, by the way, I made this up, but the other people who have come out and somehow been affected by it mm-hmm. and have their own tales and stories of it. You know, and then these people that firmly believe, some are, you know, undoubtedly attention seekers. They're out there. They yeah. want to... You know, be known, but for most people, it's you can almost see that they're uncomfortable having those moments yeah. shared, unless they're around somebody who, you know, is like-minded or at least open-minded. You know, because they're you know, you don't ever want to be, you know, pointed out as like the nutter or the tinfoil hatter or, you know, whatever they love to throw as a demeaning term at you nowadays.
Yes.
Enunciation is our specialty.
Yes. Grammar Nazis, welcome. Basically, what I was going to say before I completely flubbed my lines in my own head, let alone out my mouth, is like when you have like places like Oak Island, too, that have their history from everything from UFO strange lights to pirates to Templars.
Templars!
Like, those are the big ones. And everything even from, I think, was it Aztecs or Aztecs Mayans? I'm always getting my shit mixed up. Anyway, gold from Central America. I want to say Aztecs is probably more realistic. Ended up there as well, supposedly, allegedly, as a thought process. It just makes you go, why is there so many stories for this? And some of them are just people connecting pieces that may or may not be there. But what we do know is there was some strange lights seen on the island. Some people found a spot that looked like something was dug in. They dug the spot, and what do you find? Some weird shit. Every, what was it, 10 feet or whatever? Something like that? 15 feet?
Find another layer.
Another level. Stone inscription, yada yada, down, 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 till, of course, it fills up with water by itself as what is known as the booby trap. Which, of course, this could be just a sinkhole on the island, as they do have them. Which is the other fun part of this thing is, you have science saying, some people saying it's sinkholes, and that's what created this. And then other people saying that it couldn't have been. But at the end of the day, if you have a sinkhole versus somebody hiding a treasure the way they did, sinkhole's more probable.
Well, could you imagine the twisted reality of that? You're walking along one day, way back in ancient whenever, and, you know, giant sinkhole, right in the middle of this island. You look down there like, you know, big ass hole. Throw your little cave nickel down there. And then, 100 years, 1,000 years, 1,500 years later, along comes these scientific people looking around, and they're like, oh my God, look at all these great tricks and traps and different entrances and exits. And it's like, nah, it's just a rube farmer, found a sinkhole, buried some shit.
What if, here's a fun Oak Island thing, what if that was just a trash hole, which is why you're finding miscellaneous stuff in there, because it was already a sinkhole.
Like an ancient Roman landfill.
Yeah, can you imagine that? That's all everybody's been chasing for the last 200 years is a ancient landfill.
The Templars version of New Jersey.
Did you see the last episode of Curse of Oak Island?
No. I haven't watched much of that show, and it's really sad to me because that is right down the alley of the stuff I love.
Yeah. the after episode for the season, which kind of gave a quick update on the last episode, the, God, I can't keep blanking on their names now. Anyway, the brothers for the show were talking to the host of the guy that does, like, the Digging Deeper, whatever they call the after show that they run occasionally.
Okay.
At the one guy's winery. And he has a special room in the back. And he tells the guy, just stand there. The guy's like, okay. And then you see this ceiling open up, light pours down onto a Templar symbol. And the guy is just like, awesome? Why? You know, like, that's the question. Because
it looks cool and people pay extra for drinks.
Yep, and the brother goes, well, there's lots of reasons for that, which we're not going to get into now. And I'm screaming at the TV, you motherfucker, why show that?
Right.
And then it made me think, though, I'm like, next here's a on. Fun question, because the Templars are so associated with the island. What if these gentlemen, these brothers, are actually Templars? What if the Templars are chasing their own alleged history? And I thought that would actually be a very interesting thought process, because Templars, Masons, all those type of secretive groups, yeah, you know, they became one or the other, but it wasn't necessarily like a slow turnover. It's more like pieces formed this again. So who's to say they didn't lose some of their information for what they did and didn't?
You mean like, essentially you're saying that the show would be like the Templars' PR version of Help Me Find My Treasure?
Not quite, but
you know,
kind of.
You could have, you know, corporation sponsors fund and pay for you to go out there with this cool machinery, dig and find the thing that your ancestors lost.
Or they think they lost. You're not sure. Yeah. You're just hunting down that legend yourself.
I mean, it's not the craziest conspiracy theory you'll ever hear.
No, but I thought that was interesting.
It's no Bohemian Grove.
That's a whole other story. Skull and crossbones. Good old political bullshit. Which, speaking of unexplained, that is pretty much politics in a nutshell. But I think Oak Island and mysteries like that, I think, to me, the real mystery and fun of the unexplained isn't necessarily what's there or isn't. It's the chase of what is there or isn't.
The pursuit of knowledge, yeah. And it's, again, it's the thing about what tickles the fancy, right? What provides inspiration. And you think about it, and, they, you know, I guess if I had to go talk to my younger self, the first thing I'd tell myself when you're going through school is, hey, stupid little third grader guy, because that's where I figured I'd have to get a hold of myself. Hey, stupid little third grader guy, you need to go become Indiana Jones. It's that simple. I mean, the life that you want to live is should be, what, a scientist, an archaeologist, an engineer, something where you chase those boundaries. And, you know, they think that, for me at least, being a child of the 80s, Indiana Jones is the greatest transference of that. You know, mm-hmm. that you could go back and say, what you need to do is chase down answers. Go around the globe. Go find these
punch
things.
Punch some Nazis.
Always punch some Nazis. Not Germans, because not all Germans are Nazis.
Yep, just Nazis.
Right, just Nazis. It's acceptable. I've seen comic books. They say it's okay. But again, it's because it tickles the inspiration, right? It's the things that make you get up in the morning and trek halfway around the world to take your mini little shovel and dig in some inhospitable environments that people are trying to bomb out of existence from time to time. And to be able to look at the things we dig up out of the ground, right? To see the castles or the pyramids or the different step temples and the different places that you find, to know that what we're doing is digging that out of the ground. And we're trying to make sense of that, to figure out how they made it, what they used it for, what they were going to do with it, what they knew, how they did it. And we don't, you know, we don't know, and we'll never know, but it tickles the fancy. It spurs the imagination. It makes you try to look at the world in a different light to understand, because, you know, it's trying to, how do you communicate with people from 10,000 years ago? I mean, it's absolutely impossible unless that phone booth pops up on the corner, right? But they've left these clues for us. You know, they look at the pyramids to swing back and go chaotically back in a circle. They say that, you know, the pyramids, the dimensions of the pyramids, if you look at the cubic footage of them, what is it, across the base, have a certain kind of measurement. And then from top to bottom have a certain measurement. But the numbers involved in their building help explain the curvature of the earth and the different, almost like it's a living museum of their knowledge about the planet that they lived on. And here we are, what, say, thousands of years later, trying to figure out what the hell they built it with. You know, and they were far enough at some point in some terms to be able to build something that lasted long enough to make a civilization as advanced as ours go, what the hell is that?
And I know we are guilty as a society of modern looking at things and just going, well, they couldn't have done that.
That's right, we have to be the best. No one's ever been smarter than we have.
But time and time again, people have shown ways to move like 1-ton bricks that they do by themselves with simple physics and whatnot. And then
find that harmonics, the sound waves can transfer things.
And then you have this simplicity that in a lot of ways is lost now, just because we are so reliant on technology that I don't know if we can necessarily think basically anymore.
Well, yeah, you hear about it and you say that the Atlanteans use giant crystals to store their power and, you know, or use for their magic spells or whatever they describe these things. And you go, nah, giant crystals, that's crazy. And then you say, well, what do we build these giant computers out of? Well, crystallized quartz chips. Oh, shit. I mean, that's the same thing.
Radios.
It's not a giant raw uncut crystal swinging from the top of a temple that we cut out of stone by hand.
Not yet.
But it's a damn crystal. You know, it's transcribing electronical, information or, you know, vibrational information, whatever you want to call it. And it's amazing. Like right now, science is building living computers. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm trying to think of the name for it. I mean, they're failing horribly because it's not a quantum computer. But it's a computer on living cells that I'm going to have to take a blank here and come back to that. Go ahead, run with it.
Well, speaking of living computers, I mean, we are getting closer to artificial intelligence as well being, I don't use the term alive because I don't want to say alive, but definitely an entity with its own thought process. And some of the things, like I've been on the internet for years, like, you know, you can find some of those websites where you can ask questions, they respond. And sometimes it's kind of scary accurate. Other times it clearly doesn't understand anything you're saying because it's a computer program. But the jumps that's made in like 5-10 years is pretty impressive.
No, so. Technology. What they said, I was reading an article the other day that was explaining that the UK is worried that some of its workers are going to be at risk of being completely replaced by automated work bots, right? Whether it's the machines that put together cars, or, you know, put together small transistors into radios, or they do the soldering into computers, the fine-tuned things that machines and mechanics and robots do better than humans. And you're looking at replacing those, what they call blue-collar jobs of the people that put in the time, the labor, and put themselves at risk. But you look at it, and it's amazing because technology has advanced to a point where you can literally free the human being from any... Well, not any, but most need to do anything, to do any work, to grab a shovel and dig in the ground. Technology's gone so far past that, yet all we've been able to do as humans with that technology is figure out a way to enslave other humans with that technology.
Facebook. Anyway.
Branding.
Yes.
But no, I mean, it's because it's sad, right? Because that's what it's all about, is that the technology, instead of being able to push those bounds and make those leaps, is being used to turn the light on and off, to open the door, close the door, open the door, close the door. Let me swipe in to make sure my employees aren't taking an extra 30 seconds out of my corporate clock while they should be sitting down making me money, right? I mean, that's what technology moves forward in. And it's like the argument would be, you know, can you fund advanced research without that, right? Because you need to be able to make money out of it. You need to take that research and turn it into business. And that's why technology gets used against us more often than not. Or is it just, you know, a scary cabal of people who sit up there and there's three people that look at the world and say, you know what? Fuck all of you people. The technology we're going to use is like shackles on your neck. If you'd like to sponsor us, though, with shackles on your neck, we'd probably be open to that.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, if you got the cash, we got the time.
Shadowycabals.com.
May not be a real website.
You probably shouldn't Google that because it's really close to phonetically sounding like something else.
Yes. And, I'm thinking we're getting near the end here because we've been live about 40 minutes, give or take, now.
Yeah. Rambled about everything.
And like I said, this is our first episode. We don't want to get... Well, actually, I shouldn't say get too in-depth because I think we'll bounce back and forth no matter what anyway, no matter what kind of show notes we have or don't have. I want to thank everybody for joining us. I hope we enjoyed it. If you have any critiques, feel free to... You know, visit AsgardHammer.com and Chronicles of Madness and just let us know. Let us know what's good, bad. Send us an email at madness@AsgardHammer.com. That's my personal email address.
We should probably spell that out for them just so they get the whole trick on it, because, you know, at the end of the day, you want to make sure that if they have any hate mail, anything they'd like to yell and scream, that, you know, these are the times when we're just starting out that I'd actually really love to hear that. You know, in about 4, maybe 7 episodes or after we get a few dozen hate mails, I probably won't want to hear them as much.
Or maybe will. I don't know. At the end of the day, we don't mind feedback. I know I don't. I laugh at some of the things I've seen as comments on some of my other website projects. I just go, what the fuck, and move on.
Interaction's beautiful.
Yes. We encourage thought processes. Is there something you want us to talk about? Send us an email. Leave it. Drop us a line somewhere. We will add that to our list of possibilities. Maybe it's something already in our thought process. We probably talk about just about anything and everything.
You provide us with the idea, and we'll show up with Gallagher with a giant sledgehammer and watermelon the hell out of your idea. We'll pick through the seeds and find out what it's left. But again, you know, we want to go ahead and thank you for your time that you put in to listen to all this. My name is Michael Mayhew, and this is once again
Cedric.
And we'd like to thank you again. All feedback welcome at.
Almost said the wrong website. That's great. That's what you're used to doing things. AsgardHammer.com. That is AsgardHammer.com. Probably the same place you found this podcast at least I would think, would be the website. And then if you want to mail us, just mail to madness@AsgardHammer.com. Again, that's madness@AsgardHammer.com. If not, you go under About Us on Asgard. You will find both our names and an email address. Just send it to us. Subject line, show, or question, or FU. Whatever you're writing about, let us know. And we'll go from there. We try to answer emails, but we have full-time jobs.
This sign-off has just become that uncomfortable conversation with your ex where you're like, no, you hang up first. No, you hang up.
You know, it's not you, it's us, and I'm just kidding.
This is the first time it's ever happened to me, I swear to God.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, maybe it's because I was doing too much running earlier.
Yeah, most shows probably have a 30-second exit. I think we're on like 2-3 minutes now of just telling you why you're still here.
Yeah.
I mean, I gotta use the bathroom, guys. I mean, come on.
I'm using it right now.
And that's why we're live. So, Smell-O-Vision will be next week. So, see you then.
Goodbye.